ARUP Institute for Learning presents Insight.
Education.
Leader.
Technology.
Experiment.
Quality.
Esoteric.
Informatics.
Clinical utility.
Patient care.
Research. Laboratory.
Excellence.
Join us as we delve into emerging topics presented by ARUP medical directors who are faculty in the Department of Pathology at the University of Utah School of Medicine. Golden Welch, Dr. Hopkins, and Dr. Strothman have discussed screening versus definitive testing. They now turn their focus onto qualitative versus quantitative testing.
We hear the terms qualitative and quantitative testing, especially in the field of pain management. We discussed a little bit about the different methods, more definitive and immunoassay screen. If we could talk a little bit about that and the differences between a quantitative and qualitative result.
Well, one of the things is always directing the clinician towards the right test for the right application. We're not just going to say, here's a test for buprenorphine. Good luck with that.
One size fits all.
One size fits all, exactly. As far as qualitative versus quantitative, this is a major consideration in pain management. And sometimes all you care about is whether the drug is present or not. And this may be true in the case of the illegal drugs. If the patient has been taking marijuana and you figure that out, it doesn't really matter how much they used. It's there. That's a problem.
In terms of quantitative testing, there are a couple aspects where that fits in. One of them actually goes on what Dr. Hopkins said about THC. If marijuana is not supposed to be there and they find marijuana, that might be enough. So it doesn't really matter how much marijuana is there. But one of the caveats that comes into play with that is, well, what about a patient who's positive for marijuana and gets a second chance, comes back a month later and is positive for marijuana? Right. So what do we know about marijuana? It's that the half-life is extremely long. You know, it's a very lipophilic or a fat-soluble compound. So sometimes it can actually be present for 21 days or longer in the urine of a patient who is a chronic user or a heavy user. So then because of that, it might be very important for a physician to have quantitation, right? Because now a positive may mean something different. It could still be a positive, but it could be trending down. And because it's trending down, the patient is now complying with the idea of, you know, we found you positive for marijuana, cut it out, and the patient's doing it, but they're still positive, and it just takes time for that to occur. So that's one situation where quantitative testing can be of value. Another related one is pharmaceutical impurities. Some of the compounds that are taken are allowed to have certain percentages of related drugs based upon the processing components and the synthesis, you know, components that are there as well. And so it may be possible for somebody to be taking one compound and show evidence of another compound that qualitatively both are present, and that looks like potentially abuse of a compound they're not supposed to be taking. But instead, it could actually be a pharmaceutical impurity, and quantitation is something that could help out with that. But I think the biggest caveat to all of that is most oftentimes is physicians believing that they need quantitation to interpret a drug test. And I think it's relatively rare that quantitation is important. And oftentimes what I will typically ask is, if you have a patient with 300 nanograms per mil of clonazepam versus a patient with 30, which one do you feel is more compliant? And oftentimes they will say, well, the 300 is probably more compliant. And the next question I ask is, well, what's the creatinine concentration for both? And typically they haven't thought about that, or it's not something they typically will factor into their decision. And that comes into play with urine concentration, which can vary considerably from patient to patient. So we could have 300 nanograms per mil of clonazepam in one patient, 30 in another, but have a factor of 10 difference in concentration of the urine. And so, in fact, they could be identical concentrations. And if you don't take the creatinine and the urine concentration into effect, then it's really not going to help with that interpretation. So I think it's really sort of that disentangling that idea of quantitation and confirmation and being confident in the numbers. I think physicians, and it's not surprising that for decades they've looked at qualitative results as being nonspecific and preliminary. But you can make a tandem aspect, the gold standard in confirmatory testing, you can turn it into a qualitative testing. It's just how you report. So the time of flight test that we use, it's qualitative, but it's based on quantitative cutoffs. We actually get numbers off of the instrument, but we report them qualitatively. And that allows us to offer better testing, more streamlined and more efficient for the laboratory, but also better for patient care as well. Quantitation still has a role with pharmacokinetics, you know, and that goes to, I think, a different discussion of what answer are you trying to get at. If you're trying to get at dose compliance, then urine testing is really not what you're looking for. But in terms of just, are they taking their medication or not? Typical qualitative urine drug testing is really all that's typically needed to answer a majority of the questions that a physician would have.
How often do you have clinicians call in and demand this quantitative result when a qualitative result is appropriate?
I often get clinicians that call in to ask a question about test results on the Path on Call service, where they want to know if the patient took too much of the drug or if they're taking enough of the drug based on a urine result. And that's just not appropriate, as Dr. Strathman was saying. If you would like to know dose compliance, then you need to be looking at plasma. There is no real correlation between the amounts that you're going to see in urine and the amounts that you're going to see in blood. It's so different because of the metabolisms and the concentration of urine, which you can tell by the creatinine, between the different patients.
When it becomes an interesting issue, too, when you think about what does it mean for an assay to be sensitive, and it doesn't really matter how you measure. It's really the difference of how low can you measure, and you could measure quite low with some immunoassays. You can actually measure quite low with some mass spectrometry tests. And so it gets back really to the idea of when you see a present on a chart, oftentimes the thought is, well, it can't be as specific or it can't be as sensitive as something that gives me a number. And that's sort of just, again, trying to sort of disentangle those two ideas. The time of flight assay that we offer, it's a qualitative for urine testing, for pain management compliance testing. We actually have cutoffs that are equivalent to our confirmatory test or our more definitive tandem aspect testing. So there you can't really argue that if it's lower than the limit of quantitation or if it's below our cutoff for the time of flight test, ordering another test by tandem aspect that has the exact same cutoff is going to give you the exact same concentration, which is a less than. And so it really comes down to what is the actual cutoff, how was it established, and how does it compare to other these testings. Whether or not you report out the number or you put out a present or a not detected has nothing to really do with the cutoff or the sensitivity. We have some clients who want quantitative testing. They don't want to give it up, and so they want us to reflex the time of flight test. And I've said, no, we will do immunoassay screen with reflex to quantitation. We've had that workflow for years, decades, and we'll use that. The time of flight test to reflex time of flight test is foolish because it's mass spec reflexing to mass spec. And most people, when you think about definitive testing and reflex to confirmation, it's not because you think the first assay was inferior. It's because you want to be able to go back to the original sample, reprep it, and find out that, yes, I didn't use the wrong sample, or I didn't make a mistake in the actual testing, or the interferences that are present in the first assay weren't there in the second assay. So it's this, you know, the idea of screen with reflex is not being used as true confirmation most of the time, especially not in pain management. It's really being used as, well, now I just want more specific information. So if we give you specific information right away, why is there any need to go any further than that? Morphine was morphine before, it's morphine again. Right. Now it's just morphine 322 nanograms per mil, but it didn't change really the clinical interpretation whatsoever.
On the next segment.
In the case of the family physician treating their young patients with ADHD meds, I get a lot of calls on the Path on Call service asking if methamphetamine would be expected because the patient's on Adderall. Understand the metabolic pathways that amphetamine is never metabolized to methamphetamine.